Now, to lighten the tone, short music satirization of modern business speak. This is Jonathan Coulton with Re Your Brains.
Hey, Tom, it's Bob from the office down the hall. It's good to see you, buddy. How have you been? Things have been okay for me, except that I'm a zombie now. Really wish you'd let us in. I think I speak for all of us when I say I understand why you folks might hesitate to submit to our demand. But here's an FYI, you're all gonna die screaming.
All we wanna do is eat your brains.
We're not unreasonable. I mean, no one's gonna eat your eyes.
All we wanna do is eat your brains.
We're at an impasse here. Maybe we should compromise. If you open up the door, we'll all come inside and eat your brains. I don't wanna nitpick, but is this really your plan? Spend your whole life locked inside a mall. Maybe that's okay for now, but someday you'll be out of food and guns, and you'll have to make the call. I'm not surprised to see you haven't thought it through enough. You never had the head for all that bigger picture stuff. But Tom, that's what I do, and I plan on eating you slowly.
All we wanna do is eat your brains.
We're not unreasonable. I mean, no one's gonna eat your eyes.
All we wanna do is eat your brains.
We're at an impasse here. Compromise. You open up the door, we'll all come inside and eat your brains. I'd like to help you, Tom, in any way I can. I sure appreciate the way you're working with me. I'm not a monster, Tom. Well, technically I am. Got another meeting, Tom. Maybe we could wrap it up. Get to common ground somehow. Meanwhile, I'll report back to my colleagues who were chewing on the doors. I guess we'll table this for now. I'm glad to see you take constructive criticism well. Thank you for your time. I know we're all busy as hell. And we'll put this thing to bed when I bash your head open.
All we wanna do is eat your brains.
We're not unreasonable. I mean, no one's gonna eat your eyes.
All we wanna do is eat your brains.
We're at an impasse here. Maybe we should compromise. Open up the doors, we'll all come inside and eat your brains.
This is Collapse. This is what I wrote for the members. This was envisioned and written about in detail for decades by the peak oil movement. Sing the praises of Matthew Simmons, Rich Heinberg, Robert Hirsch, Matt Savinar, Jay Henson, Richard Duncan, Colin Campbell, Jean Laharrier, Michael Caine, Carolyn Baker, Adam Porter, Jamie Hecht, and above all, Dale Allen Pfeiffer. Dale's the one who turned me loose. He introduced me to peak oil. What do we all say? We all said, big things are going to start breaking down for a whole lot of reasons, and there will not be enough energy to fix them. The Indian Ocean, tsunami, Fukushima, Katrina, Haiti, Christchurch, deep water horizon, and the ones that are coming. You know, there's a mess. All new oil drilling now is taking place in deep water because there ain't no more to find on the land. And they're going deeper and deeper. And you know what? Deep water horizons are going to get bigger and uglier and meaner. And we're about to go up and do it in the Arctic, the source of all weather. Now, what happens when you change the specific gravity, the salinity, the opacity of seawater? The North Pole is the source of all region on the planet. My father was an Air Force aviator, an interceptor, flying around over the North Pole waiting for the damn Russians. And what he was taught was that the North Pole is the source of all weather. So now we're going to go up and risk another deep water horizon up there. We're also ready to go to war. There's literal subs. It's a new generation of submarines, and there's SEAL teams, and there's warriors moving all over the region. The Canadians, the Russians, the United States, China. You get enough cats in a tight enough wet paper bag and you start shaking it, pretty soon a cat fight's going to break out. Until you change the way money works, you change nothing. We need to find a 100th monkey, and we need to find that sumbitch right now. You all know that story. If you haven't, go see the movie.
Many of you will be familiar with the fact that I accurately and precisely foresaw the hows and the whys of the 2008 housing market implosion, and that the financial collapse, which followed. Many of you will recall that in my biggest lecture ever at the University of Washington, Seattle, in 2005, Pacific Northwest. This is my home. This is my country. Before a crowd of 2,500, I laid it all out and I said with all the force and the conviction that I had that the first step in preparation for these days was to get out of debt. It's too late for that now. Okay, it's all coming down, but that doesn't mean the game is over. Even now, everyone of these conflicts, global conflicts around the world, we are so close to a global nuclear war, I can't tell you. Let me tell you what the people at CollapseNet know. And you know, if I wrote Crossing the Rubicon, which is for sale outside, 7 years ago I described the world we're living in today. But right now, a major global tug of war is taking place over Syria. It's like a tug of war. Because behind Syria is Iran. Behind Iran is China. They're pulling in one direction. And to the west is Europe, United States. Of course, to the north of Syria, the Kurds and the Turks. The Turks are now inches away from war with Israel. They've recalled their ambassador. They're refusing further military cooperation. Just a few days ago, the Israeli embassy in Cairo was sacked and burned. Did you know about that? Good. Good. But not only that, in Iran, or Iraq, Muqtada al-Sadr with his Mehdi army of 2 million men, who kicked the United States military's butt and fought it to a standstill in Fallujah and the British in Basra in 2003-2004. That 2,000-man army is an army, and it's waiting because there's a deadline for all U.S. troops to leave Iraq by December 31st. On tomorrow's World News Desk for our members at CollapseNet, we have a story where Muqtada al-Sadr has just today called for a cessation of all attacks on American military personnel in Iraq to give them time to leave Iraq. But that if all American military personnel are not out of Iraq by December 31st, the war will resume with much greater intensity. Behind Muqtada al-Sadr is Iran. And behind Iran is China. But in the South China Sea, something that I described amazingly perfectly well in 2004, I said that the South China Sea was going to become one of the greatest global flashpoints because it contains not only small deposits of gas and oil, but it also contains the supply routes through which almost all the oil going to China, Japan, the Philippines, and Korea pass. If you were a CollapseNet member, you would know that those tensions are building mightily. And remember, Japan is mortally wounded, and Russian bombers are now violating Japanese airspace. Japan is calling to rewrite its constitution, allowing it to develop nuclear weapons. Is that insane? And yet, the infinite growth monetary paradigm pushes us closer by the minute to the ultimate reset button, the ultimate hiding of all evidence, a global nuclear conflict. And we are so much closer to that than almost anybody in this room can comprehend. And what's happening in the meantime? Well, we also had a little civil unrest this year. By the way, Greece is going to default in a couple of days. The Greek revolution has hit a whole new level of intensity. But we've had the riots in London. We've had, you know, there was a first ever confrontation clash between protesters and police in Tel Aviv. We have flash mobs here, and the massive civil unrest, I'm afraid, is on the map here. It's coming in a heartbeat. Los Angeles is a tinderbox. And that blackout scared the crap out of everybody in Southern California. You trust me. And the violence will break out in the big cities like it did in the 60s, and exactly probably where it did in the 60s. Detroit, Newark, Chicago, Los Angeles. Same places we had. It's amazing how history repeats itself. Well, what I have been, I've been on TV quite a bit lately. There's talk even that Howard Stern's finally going to mention my name. I should have some fun with Howard Stern. But I've been getting some press, and what I have been saying to everybody 30 and under, especially, and they've been listening. See, at CollapseNet, we got 5,500, 5,600 members, but these are movement leaders, these are opinion makers, these are the people who are doing it right now in 66 countries. And I've said very, very clearly, I don't care how mad you are, and God, you're justified to being mad for what's been done to you, for what you're being left with, how they're piling more debt on you now and trying to kill you and leave you nothing. But you must stay out of the streets. You must not get violent. I'm a warrior. I want to win this war. Because that's what they want. The United States government, Tony Blair, David Cameron, God, is he disgusting. Rush Limbaugh, everybody is doing everything in government now they can to start civil unrest. They're pushing every button. They are again trying to separate us racially. They're trying to separate us against, again, it's the division, it's the separation. That's the fundamental sin which must be killed, the error which must be erased. So if to anybody anywhere in the world who can hear my voice, and this is why I ask Zeitgeist to share this video, it's why I ask our CollapseNet members to make this video viral, please listen to me. The longer you can stay out of the streets and not become violent, the more stupid, evil, corrupt, foolish the old paradigm becomes. Hold it! The ability to contain the will to violence is one of the skills a warrior must master. So stay out of it, because the government's looking more stupid by the second, and pretty soon more people are going to get what the real enemy is, and I just pray that, that sinks in around the world. We don't do what we do with CollapseNet, and I haven't done what I've done over the course of a lifetime with crystal balls or magic or spells or anything like that. But I do this because we have a model that works. That model was laid out with 1,000-foot notes across the Rubicon. It's the model we use, and it's very effective. We live in an infinite growth paradigm, and infinite growth is not possible on a finite planet. Wait a minute. Let me hit you with that again real quick. Infinite growth is not possible on a finite planet. The current economic and financial paradigm is hopelessly and irrevocably corrupt. anything they tell you is a lie. That without cheap, affordable energy, number three, economic activity must contract. That with 10 calories of fossil fuel input for every calorie of food in the industrialized world, a massive die-off and reduction of human population is inevitable. It's underway. And that the most important imperative to save lives is to, by any and all means possible, relocalize food production. This is where I have to come back to Ron Paul again. You know, he was in the video, Truth and Lies of 9/11, which I made as a result of my lecture at PSU 10 years ago. That's online. I sold 25,000 of them. God knows how many hundreds of thousands of times it's been viewed. But Ron Paul wants to gut the FDA. Ron Paul wants to gut the people that will raid your farmers' markets, that will take away your raw milk, that will stop your ability to grow food and share it locally. It's amazing how his platform and the platform, you know, the beliefs of the Libertarian Party are everything the relocalization movement needs to get more deeply about its business. And for all of us here tonight, I don't know what's going to happen between now and the end of the year. This, the Committee of 12 meets for the first time in 4 days. It has to cut $1.4 trillion in the middle of the night. The Super Committee, Committee of 12, you heard of that? Unconstitutional, fast-track, unamendable legislation that they put together, send to Obama at the White House, no debate, no nothing. Kind of like the Patriot Act was done. God, I wish some people would have gotten more upset about it then, but Ron Paul did. And so those cuts are going to be coming. Now they have to pay for Irene, which is never going to be paid for. And the next major disaster here, one more disaster, is enough to break everything completely. We're just waiting for another big hurricane out of the Gulf. You just had Tropical Storm Lee do some serious damage to oil and gas refining in the Gulf. And just today, Kurdistan, a part of Iraq, just suspended all oil export for no reason. Well, I mean, things are getting thick. But I have to tell you that while this winter is going to be crazy, and I have no idea about this or why, but my research says everything that I've done for 30 years to find out, to come to the conclusion that it was the separation of man from this planet, it was dominion, that whole separation, that's the fundamental evil. But now I have concluded, based upon my own research, that it's the winter of 2012 that will be the make-or-break winter for Homo sapiens, for mankind, for life on this planet. Now, I'm not a student of the Mayan prophecies, but I was also a detective. I don't ignore facts. You know what I'm saying? And I can only sit back with childlike wonder and watch what's happening now. And there's a part of me that's welcoming it. Because if there was that kind of clarity and that kind of spiritual vision that existed so long ago and it's proving to be true now, then it's proof, if nothing else, that not everything is a lie. But we watch to see how it's going to turn out. And I just say, I am like a child as I watch all of this unfold. But between now and the end of the year, it's going to be a thrill ride. The body blows are going to come harder, they're going to come faster, they're going to be deeper. I'm looking at, again, I got to say, you know, maybe a 500 to 900 point loss in the Dow tomorrow if the markets acknowledge the German minister's statement that Greece will default. It's going to happen sooner or later anyway. But it's going to continue to come, and the civil unrest comes. We also have to be worried about hijacking of food shipments because we track that. Food shipments are being hijacked routinely now in interstate commerce. So anybody in a big city, any big city in the country normally has only 3 or 4 days worth of food on hand. Your food supply lines are critical. That is another absolute critical reason why you must start growing your own food as quickly as possible. There was an experiment done, a psychology experiment done at Stanford University many years ago where they screened a bunch of students and got all a bunch of well-balanced, you know, very, very well-screened students, and they separated half into inmates and half into guards. And as soon as they created that division, no matter what happened, it degenerated so fast they had to stop the experiment before somebody was killed. It's the separation, it's the division which does this. I want to read you another quote from something I wrote in 2004. My second ever economic alert at From the Wilderness. It's from an essay called As the World Burns from December of 2004. And barring a miracle, the end results will be exactly the same as from a physical attack. Devastation so complete and unthinkable, magnified by the brutal impacts of peak oil, that only a few will ever try to prepare for it. That is sad, because preparation will make all the difference, barring luck or divine intervention, in who survives and to what extent they remain intact and functioning afterwards. One key to grasping the interrelatedness of these developments is to understand that dramatic economic collapse, especially in the case of a superpower or an empire, has historically created a power vacuum which has resulted in war. If, as von Clausewitz said, war is a continuation of politics by other means, then we must admit that politics is a continuation of economics. And economics is a continuation of energy. All economics, at least in this world, is founded upon energy, whether it is hydrocarbon energy or physical labor, food calories. In 2004, I offered as immediate and urgent advice: curtail all unnecessary spending, reduce credit card balances, get to know and become friends with your neighbors on all sides. Keep at least a week's worth of cash and food in your home. Now I'm upping that to 3 weeks of food at least. And water, fresh water too. Look at your residence and ask yourself what you could do to improve it if there were no heat and no electricity. Start preparing for both. Look at your insulation if you own, your windows, curtains, a great source of heat loss, and roof. Buy physical gold, not paper gold. I am convinced that we will see gold reach at least $600 per ounce in 2005. It's a great way to hedge against the falling dollar. They called me a conspiracy theorist for that. So here we are at the end of this talk, and I think Spirit and I got pretty well through this. And I got one last thing to say, but let me just repeat: until you change the way money works, you change nothing. And if you have a copy of this, when we get it up, we get it out, please share it. Please share it as widely as you possibly can, because we have no time left. I wrote a book called Crossing the Rubicon, The Decline of the American Empire at the End of the Age of Oil, 7 years ago, using a model that I had built from a quarter century. I described and predicted with all too alarming accuracy the world we're in today. At the very end of Crossing the Rubicon, here's what I wrote. Human beings have explored outward to the limits of this planet in search of resources, understanding, and experience. We have peered deep into boundless space by sending probes billions of miles away and even beyond the outer planets of the solar system. We also explore backwards in times, extrapolating the sublime mysteries of the Big Bang cosmology and theoretical physics. We spend hundreds of millions of dollars and lifetimes of intellectual passion on archaeological digs to find the earliest ancestors of our bodies and our human mind. But that mind is readily seduced toward astonishing feats of domination and cruelty. The combination of bureaucracy, technology, and rationalized quantitative measurement that built the great industrial civilization of the past 200 years also created Nazi death camps. Their efficiency and centralized control were as developed as their uses were depraved and vile. The same cold administrative approach to life that built the vast economies of the modern world is also preparing a terrible solution to the collapse of those economies. In the empire's vision, love and art and religion count for nothing. It is as if the human race existed only in a statistical dimension, a calculus equation in need of a solution. Distilled, all our pursuits essentially ask just two simple questions. Who are we really, and why are we here? We have been looking in the wrong places for our answers. Let them that have ears listen. Let them that have eyes see. Thank you for having me back, Portland.
And what can I find to follow that? Well, I was pleased to see question and answer section, which just fitted to make up the 2 hours.
I don't understand how we can change the way money works, because as far as I can tell, money only works to facilitate or catalyze our conversion of resources to waste versus the economic process, the hyper-entropication, if you will, over our own biological existence. So how do we change that? I spend money. If I spend $1,000, it's 1,000 times the damage if I spend $1.
You're asking the question that the infinite growth paradigm wants you to ask, because you're not solving the problem with it. I didn't say that we have to... Okay, when I say we have to change the way money works, does not mean that we have to have a plan of what we're going to build. But what we have to change is that we have to kill the infinite growth monetary paradigm. There is no time to engage in your debates. What we have to do right now is get... If everybody were to start withdrawing all of their paper investments around the world, remember that house is coming down anyway. And if we withdraw it and kill that beast, then we will have a chance, and we kill fractional reserve banking and kill fiat currency, something which Ron Paul advocates too, and compound interest. Then we have something to build on. For lack of a better term, I'm a commander on a field of battle. You're asking me to design the post-war government of Germany before I go fight Adolf Hitler, and I refuse to do it.
Okay.
Thanks a lot again for coming down. You recommend getting rid of all debt, getting yourself completely out of debt. What do you recommend for those of us who are getting ready to rack up an impressive amount of student debt? And do you think that has something to do with why American students are a little bit less likely to protest and go on, you know, do demonstrations like in other countries?
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of a spinoff of a question I've been being asked for years, like, at what point do I stop paying the bills? Which is the bottom line, I think, for the question. And I think that time is going to be very soon, one way or the other. The United States government has already used up, we're at the debt ceiling again already, in case you didn't know. So the U.S. government's going to default at some point. The U.S. government is going to fail. So I am a practical guy on this, and what I would say is while the government still has teeth to come after you, keep the bills current. But that's not going to last forever, you know, because there are debt slaves now. And believe me, they can't hurt you if they shut off your ATM cards, if they destroy your credit rating, and so on and so forth. It's going to be a judgment call. And there's also going to be a point at which people have just said, I've had enough of this, this government's illegal, I ain't paying the bill. Those are decisions that all have to be made with the individual and in their own consciousness. But I can tell you that the phase that the government's trying to bring about now, which we would call martial law, which we would call drastic, violent, brutal, overt repression, is only a temporary way station along the way. They're not going to be concentration camps, because concentration camps cost money. They take energy. They cost food. You have to pay the guards. The government's broke. What the government is after is exactly what they created, or what was created in the Great Depression, which is a voluntary migrant workforce that will starve to death, kill each other, move itself from the Dust Bowl of Texas to California to pick the grapes of wrath. And if a few of them die along the way, that's no problem, but it doesn't cost any money. So as far as your student debts go, you know, monitor closely. If it was me, I'll just give you if I had student debt right now, I would be making the smallest possible payments to keep them from coming after me. I'd be getting late, you know, and I'd be dragging it out just enough to show good faith, because I can guarantee you this is all coming down. I just don't know when.
Thank you, Michael. This is Kevin, and it kind of goes along with that, but it's a question about taxation on when you're working. I still have to provide for a family, and do I have an idea where I wanted to claim maximum exemptions to be able to allocate the funds that would normally be, you know, 20% to government that I don't want it to go to. I don't support what they've been doing with my money. And so I've been trying to think of ways to not buy into that system. So, I mean, my idea has been...
Oh, I would finagle every way I could by claiming as many deductions as possible and then waiting a couple of years to file my tax return. You know, but, just do what you have to do to keep the government off your back, because the government's going to lose its teeth. You know, we're probably going to be without the post office by the end of the year. So how are they going to send you the collection notice for your student loan? look on the sunny side of life. Yeah.
Mike, thank you for mentioning the transition movement. Locally, we're called Transition PDX, and you can find us at transitionpdx.org. Our mission is to help build awareness and build community resilience against energy dissent, climate change, and economic decline. I'll put a sign-up sheet out there for the email list.
Bravo. Bravo. By the way, in case you don't know, I have a radio show on Progressive Radio Network. Which is on every Sunday. Carolyn Baker, my dear friend who writes for us at Collapse, that she's filling in as a guest host for me tonight. PRN is a web only, but we're the largest web-based radio network in the world. And by the way, we're getting larger numbers now than all of Pacifica. Just thought I'd say that. You know, but it's the Lifeboat Hour every Sunday. And coming up very soon, I hope to have Caroline State, the executive director of Transition U.S., who also lives near me in Sebastopol, on as a guest. So, yes.
Okay. I would like to know what you think would happen if a couple states, just stop sending their money to the feds, you know, the tribute, which really just keeps the military inventory moving, and the states just kind of took over their own Social Security, funded the schools, all that. What would happen, do you think?
Oh, it's going to happen. Again, we track this on CollapseNet. There are secession movements in... The biggest one was in Vermont. I did a big tour of Vermont about a year ago. I've got a lot of friends there. There's so much God, they got hit so hard with Hurricane Irene. And none of that infrastructure is going to get rebuilt by federal dollars. But Vermonters are like that. That's okay. Just leave us alone. We can do better alone than we can do with your help, you know? What was the question? I'm sorry, I got off on Vermont.
What would happen if states just stopped sending money to the feds?
There's seven or eight counties in Southern Cal that have moved to secede from California. There's secession movements in a few states. That's inevitable. Why, on God's green earth, when the Pacific Northwest has its own unique set of problems, Oregon, in case you haven't noticed, has been beat to economically. Here, unless you count Google moving its, you know, blah, 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 and all that stuff in. But why would any region say, for the federal government, you have to send X number of millions of dollars of your tax relief to bail out New England? It won't happen. It's not going to happen. As the budgets get cut, the circle of influence shrinks, so that's inevitable. The Roman Empire broke up. All the empires broke up. It's going to happen. What would happen? I can't tell you exactly. I know it's inevitable. And I know that California, no way is it going to remain one single state. Probably three, because I can't see the San Joaquin Valley allowing itself to be cut in half. You know, so things break down, not up, and I encourage that, but that's why I'm not worried about the what would happen. I know what has to happen. That's why Ron Paul's economic financial policies are so important. You have to reverse the flow from the states to the federal government and turn it back around so that stuff goes. My book, Confronting Collapse, talks about it out there. So,
yeah, hey, Michael.
If the government implements martial law, what is your take on what is called the FEMA internment camps?
Well, listen, I've been saying this clearly for 10 years, and I've been running up against a very pathetic, dishonest government disinformation agent named Alex Jones. Anybody been to my website lately and seen the video Alex Jones busts himself? My God, he's a madman. I don't have to make an argument. It doesn't make any difference that 10 years ago, 2002, I caught him falsifying a story, and I confronted him on it. And somebody sent me an email, so I really screwed up. He made up a whole section of an act that didn't even exist to scare people. He's pushing that. He's the one that the Rush Limbaughs and the powers that be are going to use to sink Ron Paul because he's wrapped himself in Ron Paul's cloak. He's a liar and he's a madman. There are no FEMA camps. Get it? They're too expensive. They cost money. There's no budget to pay the guards. There's no food. They don't have the energy to heat the camps. They can't have camps for 310 million American people. There's no budget. They're going to leave us on our own. They're going to seal the cities. I have read the Patriot Act cover to cover. I deserve a medal for that. I have... Also, the Homeland Security Act. I deserve a Purple Heart for that. Okay? And it is abundantly clear that the government, there are only 13, maybe 14 combat brigades in the whole continental United States. When we bring home the troops from Iraq, there's only enough troops to protect critical infrastructure. The military will take the big cities and surround them. There may be some green zones around the port of San Pedro, where it's like the green zone in Baghdad, you know, or the port here. You know, but those acts call for only the protection of vital infrastructure, the investments of corporations, communications towers, hospitals, airports, power generators. All the troops are going to be there. There ain't going to be. I might get to a FEMA concentration camp. I probably made that list. But forget about it. For 310 million American people, the purpose of the disinformation fools is to make you worry about the wrong things. I can't be any clearer than that. And if you are have been an Alex Jones supporter, you go find this video. Alex Jones, go to CollapseNet. It's free. Type in Alex Jones. Watch this video. I don't have to say another single word after this. If you follow Alex Jones after that, God bless you. You ain't on my side of the line. But be careful how you mix Alex Jones with Ron Paul. I was Ross Perot's press spokesman in L.A. in 1992. I know a lot about politics. And I can guarantee you that when the time is right, Alex Jones will self-destruct and he'll try to get as much splatter on Ron Paul as he possibly can. So decide who you really like, Alex Jones or Ron Paul.
Hello, Michael. You talked about revolution earlier with Ron Paul, whether or not he was voted in. And I'm wondering your opinion on Julian Assange talks a lot about revolution will be inextricably linked to the internet and the speed which we can communicate globally. You talk a lot about receding from using computers and technology and stuff. What's your view on opinion on what Julian Assange says about the revolution being widely used on the internet, or the internet being widely used?
Oh, all right. We are inches away from massive internet censorship. Come on now. I mean, we saw, forget when they did it in Tunisia, or Morocco, or Egypt, or Yemen, or Syria. You know, they did it in London. They tracked down the protesters by their cell phones. They selectively shut off social media. They did it in BART in San Francisco. They're ready to pull the plug on everything. They won't pull it all at once, but you will see, and we're tracking this, a collapse net, we're tracking anybody who's speaking the truth who gets screwed with. Okay? There was a guy named Dutch Sins who does amazing stuff on weather. Facebook hacked him. We put up the story about that. We have to show real solidarity with that. But the time is coming very quickly when we're going to find, they have, our emails and our internal communications have been selectively shut down, keeping us from accessing our website or putting up stories. That's there. And at the moment the civil unrest gets out of hand, we will see this become overtly oppressive. And that's probably coming at some serious level before the end of the year. So you need to have contingency plans for what to do if. That's hard. Trust me. We're trying to work on that. But that's definitely coming.
But do you see that as a stage?
It is a stage. It's all a stage. What we're pursuing, the second law of thermodynamics says it all. It's called the law of entropy. Okay? Energy only converts in one direction, from usable to unusable. And in every energy transaction, some energy is always lost. There's always an efficiency problem. But that's the law of entropy, because the most steady state in the universe is rubble. That's what entropy seeks. That's what entropy drives to. You know that that law is working right now. And this transition phase of human existence, before post-petroleum human ascends with a new consciousness, living reunited and in balance with this planet, you know where everything's going to go, but that doesn't happen until some kind of stasis is reached. And what our struggle is about how far down we have to go before that. Until you change the way money works, you change nothing.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Brandon. I just want to do a quick address to everybody in the audience. Make sure I'm not the only one that's noticing this. If you're not yet convinced of the danger of the nuclear radiation from Fukushima, the evidence is around you. About for the past month or so, I've been noticing the steady browning of foliage in the TriMet area from the top down. Or just patches of trees, just green and one giant patch of dead. Just a slow, steady fallout. So the danger is real. We need to prepare for that. But what I want to ask you, Michael, as you know, one of the young people you're trying to reach, you know, everything that I was raised with, you know, slowly unraveling, you know, everything that I was raised with is a lie. And I'm really scared. I have a baby daughter on the way.
Thank you for telling us that you're scared. That's a sign of adaptivity. I'm scared too.
And, you know, stuck in a dead-end job, you know, stuck in an apartment, what would be, you know, separating, as you say, ice cream from the bull, what would be your recommendation for me in this coming year?
Well, we have this collective problem, those of us in the Pacific Northwest. And I do know that the Japanese government and World Press was watching what I was documenting on CollapseNet because all of a sudden all of that coverage disappeared. The first and most important thing that we have to do is establish conclusively whether or not Japan is still incinerating that waste. That is not honorable. The Japanese government, if confronted with that, would have to know that it was not honorable. And that's the way we're going to have to honor, by the way, will be one of the most valuable forms of currency that we have to share with each other. Honor is a present you give yourself, said Rob Roy. So somehow those connections need to get made. I don't know how. No.
Do we want to start one on Facebook too? Facebook petition?
People don't read petitions anymore. They like you to spend all your time getting people to sign them so they can throw them in a waste pan after and not do anything with them. You got to, insanity is repeating the same action over again, expecting different results.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow contact has to be made. We have to friend people in Fukushima and all the provinces and prefectures. Japan is dying. I mean, it's horrible over there. But we have to let them know that the world is watching and that we will know. Geiger counters and radiation detectors are going to be very important. I've got a radiation detector. It's a pretty decent one. Wes turned me on to that here, and it beeped for us a couple times in April when they were injecting the explosive stuff. But Geiger counters are going to be good, and some kind of community networks to measure. Because we've only got till next month before the rains start. You know, and I'm as scared as you are. Go to your mayor. You know, go to your city council and say, look, CollapseNet established this. Arnie Gunderson said this. He's, you know, the government ain't telling us the truth and Japan ain't telling us the truth. You're our mayor. You're our city council. You're our governor. You need to find out and tell us what the hell's going on. That's the kind of action I think that would work. You know, but somehow I would like to see the Pacific Northwest act almost as a common neighborhood. Everything from BC down to San Francisco Bay. You know, so.
Thank you for your time, Michael.
Yeah.
Excuse the sunglasses, but they're reading glasses.
They look good.
Thank you. Derek Jensen, Lear Keith, and Eric McBay are calling for deep green resistance. A culture of resistance to civilization and its domination? Do you support this culture of resistance, which includes building alternative institutions and actively dismantling the current systems of power, some of which are personal abuse of women,
That's
children,
absolutely foolish.
Minorities?
Huh? Foolish. There's no time to build any more new systems. How? The political system's completely broken. Nobody's listening. You want to have petitions and go out and drive and get something on the ballot to do this, to talk about? We're out of time.
It's not about petitions. It's about resistance.
I'm sorry, it's about...
It's not about peaceful pacifists and petitions. It's about resistance.
Resistance is important. It's critical. But how we resist is very important. Again, violence is not the answer. That's what they want. The longer we, you know, that violent resistance is avoided, the more creative forms of resistance can be devised and implemented. And you know, if Anonymous is out there and they want to hack and shut down J.P. Morgan, that's quite fine with me. I'd probably get arrested. Oh, that's okay. I've made every list anyway. But there is no time. There is no time to build any more institutions now. The first thing we have to do is to stop that beast which is killing us and shut it down.
which might include violence.
Huh?
Which could include violence.
It could, ultimately, if they attack. I mean, look, I'm an ex-cop, and I've got guns. And if I am attacked, I will defend myself. But what I'm not advocating is aggressive, offensive, physical attacks of any kind. Okay? And civil unrest where you destroy shops, infrastructure, is totally counterproductive. But I'm a warrior, and yes, I admit that violence may be necessary at some point. All creatures on this planet defend themselves. I'm not saying we don't do that. But there's no time to build anything else or even talk about it. We just got to stop that thing that's trying to kill us first.
Hi, John Dale. I have a question on your methodology. You, I'm sure, are familiar with Bruce Buena de Mesquita and his studies that predict fairly accurately what international relation events are going to happen. Do you share information with him? What about people within the World Future Society? Do you
I've never heard
talk
of them
with them?
Either. Look, I don't mean to be rude. This consciousness is evolving all over the planet so fast, I can't possibly read all of the people who are saying the same thing. There's a lot of people who have this consciousness, and I can't judge or evaluate books that I haven't read or people that I haven't talked to. What I'm joyous about is a collapse net. We have a free lighthouse directory with 1,600 hand-picked entries for everything from first aid, survival preparedness, how to purify water, hunting, blah, 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 down to the intellectual resource material. And I'll bet you that they're in our directory. I just haven't had time to read them.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay. I mean, this change of consciousness, see, we've all been conditioned to think that this isn't happening or to see how widespread it is globally. Collapse nets in 66 countries in just 14 months. So this is happening all over. There's a lot of people singing the same song, and soon we will all become one voice. That's the moment when we have power.
So as I recall, you said Japan is burning toxic waste, which is getting into the rainwater, and rainy season is coming soon. And you're also saying that we need to grow our own food. But I'm wondering, what's the point of that when the rain is just going to contaminate the food we eat?
You cannot assume that that's a given. And you cannot assume when rain brings fallout, it's a product of the jet stream and the clouds. So the radiation falls spottily. You could have a dump of, 10,000 becquerels or, something huge, and then 2 miles away, got nothing. So there's no, you won't just stop growing all food altogether. We have a number, we have to multitask here. Because even if there isn't radioactive contamination that kills the food here, we're still going to need to eat it because the whole globalized industrial food chain with 10 calories of fossil fuel and every calorie of food in your supermarket is going away anyway. That's what you have to start with. Grow your own food locally. That's what enables you to survive and build your local community. Some of us are going to die. Some of us are not going to make it. There's no place to run on this planet anymore. There's just no place left to run.
Thank you.
Hi, my name's Tim. I have two comments and a small question. I very much welcome that you're talking about the 401k. I urge everyone to look at the 401k or 403b or whatever you have signed up for. Because it's very interesting to see what kind of big corporations you're actually supporting there. And many people are not aware of this. And as you say, you're part of this big money system that propels itself and the growth that is definite or thought of indefinite. So it's very good to look at this 401k that you have and make a decision to maybe get out of it.
Get out of it. You're going to lose it anyway.
Yeah, and I think that's an important step that you can take also with relatives, neighbors, whoever, to discuss that. And it's an eye-opening thing to look at what companies you're actually supporting. McDonald's, Boeing, Monsanto, you name it. They're all in there. And you have it, and you don't know about it. And the second small comment is, you were talking about Iran, Syria, and China, and this paradigm builds up in you that Iran, China, they're all evil. You feel it the moment that you talk about them. But I just want to make a comment, having lived there, It's not China that's evil, and it's not Iran that's evil. It's the money behind China, and the money behind Iran, and the money behind all these. So don't make the fault that you get into this.
Thank you. Until you change the way money works, you change nothing. And China's bought into this. China's collapsing for the really slow campers who don't get it. China's exploding with civil unrest. Their manufacturing orders are off. Their financial bubbles are collapsing. They're having enormous power shortages, water pollution, and lots of riots. Okay? So, yes. Thank you. It's all about money.
The production of food. The only question I have for you for the production of food is, if I produce food and we all produce food, as much as I do not actually want to have a gun and use a gun, I have the fear that if I have a patch of potatoes and tomatoes, I'm not going to be able to use it because somebody will come with a gun and say to me, thanks for your potatoes. So that's kind of a...
That would change if all of your neighbors were growing their own potatoes and tomatoes and onions too, wouldn't it? And that's happened, though. I mean, we've had people who followed our advice, went back and got totally on the land in Tennessee after 2008, and after everybody in his Tennessee county was laid off, they knew we had food, they all came and took it. But he didn't do the one other essential ingredient. He didn't form a community. He didn't connect with his neighbors. He didn't form a local self-supporting group that can help shield against that. Nobody's going to make this as a lone wolf, and we're all going to get to know our neighbors real soon, real quick.
Hi, Mike. I've been following you for 10 years now. Right after 9/11, I found out about you through KABU. And
gotta love KABU.
Oh, yeah. I was at your PSU speech, which was amazing. I hope my question doesn't seem a little redundant, but I've been personally curious. Before I discovered you, I was reading an author who dealt in a lot of the same things that you're dealing with now, especially lately since you moved to Sebastopol, a lot about the infinite growth paradigm and sustainability.
Who is it?
Daniel Quinn of Ishmael.
Oh, I've heard of him. I haven't read him, but I can only read so much. I'm working 60 hours a week now, and people send me roughly 15,000 words to read a week that they all expect me to drop everything and read, and I can't. But Sebastopol is an amazing place. There is an amazingly elevated level of consciousness there. And very, very, very active and very much in the hands-on doing of relocalizing. And what I see as the empire falls apart is little city-states, you know, arising, the ones that can avoid. Mother Earth, you know, I talk about building lifeboats. But what I've also recently seen was that she's building arcs. And arcs are like a whole bunch of lifeboats tied together. And these arcs are scattered all over the world. We have members in 66 countries, and they're like seeds. Some of them are going to survive, some of them won't. But Mother Earth's got enough of this consciousness seeded so that I'm pretty sure it's going to prevail, and we have to make that happen.
Thanks, Matt. I'm glad to see where you're at right now.
Thank you.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. And I get to sing Wednesday night, too, at Dove's Garage.
Hi. First, I just want to say thanks for doing what you do. Kind of scares me to ask this, but in the wake of Fukushima, it's obvious nuclear energy is dangerous. It's an understatement. But I'm kind of curious what kind of a noble shit assessment of, or guess, I know it's a guess, dealing with the shutdown of nuclear power plants in the coming collapse, like, does that seem like a realistic...
I have been saying this so clearly for many months. There are between 440 and 480 nuclear reactors on the planet. It has to be our absolute priority to shut them all down now while we can. Because if we don't, as collapse intensifies and there's less money and less services and less skill and less equipment, we will not be able to shut them down or control them, and they will kill us. And, you know, if there is, we look at what the blackout did or what the Virginia earthquake did, that's kind of cool, you know. we see that a nuclear attack, an EMP attack, would interrupt power supplies, and the power supplies would go out, and it would be impossible to control the reactors anyway. I would consider it to be a miraculous step, but it would be a watershed moment in history, in the evolution of post-petroleum human, if we could collectively as a species get our act together and commit universally to shut them all down. Otherwise, we have to keep that real forefront in our important list of things to do.
Hi, Mike. Yeah, I've been following you since 2001, the CIA drugs thing. Then after 10 years ago exactly, I learned about peak oil from you, and I'm proud to say since 2002 I've done my own research, and yeah, I've been a peak oiler since then myself. With regards to financial stuff, I know where you stand on financial paper, as far as people holding 401ks, IRAs, stocks and all that stuff, but I've never heard any reference from the progressive community or other people like Nicole Foss or yourself make any references to shorting the market.
No. If you play it, you're guilty. If you make any money in those markets, you're not my friend. Don't do it. Don't do it. Because you're still making money based upon helping to keep that system functioning.
So you're saying no one should short the market right now at all? They could make a little something while the dollar's still worth something.
I will not advise it. For me, it's a moral issue, and I consider it offensive that anybody would recommend it to me or to my members. No.
Thank you for all the work you do, and I want to especially thank you for speaking up for Ron Paul. I feel like a lot of us want to know what we can do right now. I think a lot of people, especially in the Northwest, have a lot of misconceptions about who Ron Paul is.
And about me too, but that's the way we've been spun.
Yes. But if you feel like coalescing your energy around, the money is so important, and that's something that he can really understand and address.
I wouldn't have to tell him anything. If after the election, the phone rang and Ron asked me for advice on what he could do financially and economically to help facilitate relocalization and returning power, I'd say, just keep your promises, buddy. Just keep your promises. Just do what you told us. And that's the kind of guy he is. He's WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get.
So I'd like to urge everybody to find out for yourself. Listen to the man talk himself. Don't rely on somebody else's interpretation. I've heard a lot of people say he's a racist. He hates women.
It's not true.
It's not true.
None of it's
true. I'm the organizer of the local meetup group, but if you have questions and you'd like to know more about it, please sign up for the meetup group and
come and
talk to us.
There is a natural coalition that needs to form between lifeboat builders, transition, sustainability, relocalization, and the Libertarian Party. And Zeitgeist Movement is extreme. A great intellectual powerhouse is in there. Peter Joseph's been a guest on my show a few times. That's a coalition that needs to get built, because we will find great strength there. All right, thank you, everybody.
I find it very interesting that although we're coming from different places, Mike Griffith and I have reached the same conclusion that working with neighbors to grow your own food may be the best preparation that you can make for the coming transition. And I offer this test to any new money system. If it motivates organized teams of people to shut down nuclear reactors and decommission nuclear weapons, then it gets my vote of approval. This and all previous episodes of the show are available for download from our MP3 archive, which is unwelcomeguests.net/archive. The music is by Billy Bragg and Wilco, with lyrics by Woody Guthrie. Thank you for listening. Keep giving.